It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Great show for you. Jason Snell is here from Six Colors. So is Liz Gaines from 60DB. We're going to talk about United's bad customer service, a murder on Facebook, and what happens when retail disappears in your town. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 610, recorded Sunday, April 16th, 2017. Zombie shopping malls. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Cloudflare, the operating system for the edge of the internet. More than 6 million websites, apps, APIs, and SaaS companies use Cloudflare's services to load fast, stay secure, and weather whatever the internet throws at them. For a free online chat session with a Cloudflare support engineer, visit cloudflare.com/twit. And by NatureBox, delicious snacks made from high-quality ingredients. Eat well and feel better. Visit naturebox.com/twit to save 50% on your first order. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/twit and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit with this limited-time offer. And by Betterment, a smart, easy-to-use, and less expensive way to invest for your financial future. Get 1 month managed free when you make an initial deposit of $10,000 or more at betterment.com/twit. It's time for TWiT, This Week in Tech, show where we cover the latest tech news. Joining me, thrilled to have him, Jason Snell from SixColors.com.
Leo, pleasure to be here.
Nice
Thank
to
you.
See you.
Thanks for having me.
Host of the Incomparable podcast. Have you aired my episode yet?
We did a special member bonus where we did the like behind the scenes special
are you telling
episode
me
of it.
So. That I'm a member bonus?
Yes, you are.
That'd be a great name for the name of the year.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Member Q bonus, the
member
third.
Q bonus. I'm a member bonus. Also with us, don't spit your coffee out.
Okay.
Liz Gaines is here. I love 60DB. This is the new company Liz works for, 60DB.co. Podcast, sort of podcast. I mean, you can listen. I listen on my Echo.
Yeah, and personalized radio app.
That's what it really
nice.
Is. And it, have you heard it?
I haven't heard it. No.
It does little snippets, little short. You have a long form version and a short form version. But on my Echo, I have the short form version. So let's say ask for 60DB. I guess that's the syntax.
Just pops in, yeah.
And it starts, and it's great. And it usually starts with the news, NPR latest news, and then it throws in stuff based on my interests, and it's just really great. Mm-hmm. Listen. Wonderful. Liz does a lot of the pieces.
But you get pieces from everywhere. Like on my drive up today, I had BBC and PBS NewsHour.
Some of our
and
Twit
I
bits.
Had two of your pieces. I learned all about the pancake bot.
Oh, that was
now
awesome.
I really want to buy a pancake bot.
I need
an occasion.
Can we make some pancakes for Liz? There's a pancake.
Really?
Do we have the leftover one that's shaped like me? There's a pancake
I don't
of me.
Want your leftover pancake.
It's a day-old pancake. It's not what you want.
Yeah.
Not what you want. So we were talking before the show, and we had to stop the conversation because everybody got engaged. And it is a tech story in a way, in this United story. The passenger, David Dow, doctor on United, who was bumped. United, I guess, has a policy. It's happened to me, believe it or not, of kicking people off flights once they're already seated. Now, what's part of the story is that this broke on Twitter. It was camera phone video. There were two different videos. We saw it on Twitter before it even made the news. Of just horrific. I mean, anybody who saw it knows horrific footage of a guy screaming and being dragged off a flight by three burly police officers. He then ran back. We think, again, the reporting on this is so haphazard
mm-hmm.
that it's hard to know what really happened. But we think then he ran back on the plane disoriented and was, you know, bloodied. We saw the video of that and then dragged off. He was actually tended to and then taken off. Apparently, according to his daughter, he has suffered a loss of two front teeth, a concussion, and a broken nose. He certainly was bloodied by it. United has apologized. They at first, they said things like, "Well, he was reassigned."
They've increasingly apologized, right? Like it keeps getting better.
But see what? Okay, so in their defense,
if you have if you have a plane and you have a passenger on the plane, it's like if somebody were sitting here and disrupting the show, I would have a legal right to have ask the person to leave, and if he didn't leave and didn't leave and didn't leave, I could have a police officer come and take him out, right? Some of the blame lies on the police officers who, you know,
Used way too much force.
But it is clear also from a customer service point of view, this is the worst possible thing.
And also to call the police to forcibly remove someone is a pretty big step. To have the police enforce your corporate policies is, and the initial United comment was they had no choice. It's like, well, they certainly did have a choice.
Yeah,
they
that struck me. There must have been a better way.
And if I'm the Chicago police, I would like to have a moment of like, why are we involved in this? Like, this is
yeah, it was the airport police.
Nobody was at risk.
Well, the guy was wearing blue jeans. He wasn't, I mean, I don't know who he was, but it didn't seem like he was a normal police officer. He was airport police or some guy in jeans. Anyways, a weird story. But there is a better way, apparently.
There is a tech angle, yeah. So there was a story that I spotted that was, I think, an NPR story that was about Delta Airlines. So it turns out Delta Airlines has a lot less of these. You know, they do overbook flights. That's part of it because a certain percentage of people don't check in. And so you want to maximize that. So if 5% of your people don't show up, you...
It's even a smaller number than that, though. It's less than 1%.
Yeah, it's a tiny amount. So they overbook a little. And usually that works for them, but occasionally it doesn't.
Because they know which flights... people tend not to show up for. Highly computerized. It's data.
Yeah,
it's data science.
This is all deep data. And
it
apparently,
is data science, but we are people trying to get somewhere.
That's
on a
the
plane.
Problem.
Yeah,
when people and
right.
data science collide, sometimes the people lose.
And you have to think about it. So Delta has, Delta, like any airline, will bump a lot of their passengers. But what Delta doesn't do is generally forcibly, against the will of a passenger, bump their passengers. That happens a lot less. And the reason is that they instituted this system. When you check in to Delta, to an overbooked flight, the Delta app will actually ask you, if we need to bump you, how much money would you accept to be bumped off?
Wait a minute. They ask you?
They ask you
as a passenger. $1 million.
Well, this is the thing. So you say $1 million and I say $500.
Oh, some guy next to me
says
less.
And Liz says $700 and they only need one and they pay, it's a reverse auction.
When do you name your price? When you buy your ticket?
When you check in for the flight, so it's 24 hours away presumably or less, and they know at that point that it's overbooked and they ask this question. And then they look at the list and they take from the bottom up.
I like that.
And so they save money. They get people to volunteer, and they're willing to go up to a fairly high number.
Everybody's got a number. Well, Delta has just raised its number because this was also in response to the United thing. They say that we'll pay up to $9,950 at this point. And you know what?
I was traveling last weekend, though, and my friend was flying home on Delta, and all of their computers were down. So there are other issues.
Yeah.
That happens a lot, too.
All airlines could be better, but it is an interesting thought that data analysis and mobile apps allow an airline that wants to embrace this technology to do a better job of it. So what Delta has done is they've saved some money and also minimized forcing people off a plane who don't want to go. Because you know what? On every plane, there are people who feel they have to go back. And there are people who could stay another day or a few hours,
and it doesn't matter,
and it's worth it for them. And so Delta built this system that lets them do that, and everybody feels like they won when that happens. And you know, United, you know, I just flew United. I was actually traveling overseas while this happened, and my return flight was United. So I'm thinking, well, they might be very polite to all the passengers on this flight.
They were.
And the irony of it is that I feel like after 15 years of the experience getting worse on United, I used to fly all the time, and now I try to avoid them. This trip, I felt like they actually are starting to turn it around a little, where they realized they were going too far.
It has gotten better.
But it's happening in the midst of this PR crisis. But clearly, like, the Delta story is a good example of embracing data so that you don't have these kind of terrible passenger experiences that obviously the staff didn't even think. That's the thing that gets me about this story is the staff basically went by the book. They were clearly terrified to make common sense decisions because they had been trained to not do that.
We should point out that it was Republic Airways. It was United Express flight. The gate agents were United gate agents, but the people on board the plane, the flight crew on board the plane, was not United.
Right, because they subcontract for these short haul flights.
Still responsible.
And put United's name on it. Yeah.
You know, it makes me not want to ever fly United. At the same time, I also understand if an airline has the right to say, you know, to anybody. I can't remember the airline. I don't think it was United. Lisa and I were flying standby on a flight We'd already, once you sit down, they should not.
Yeah, that, once they give you a seat number and they put you in the seat,
that
should be it.
So we're sitting in the seat. The plane, the door's almost closed. The flight is, everybody's sitting down. They came up to me and said, the plane's overweight. You need to get off.
Right. They should, again, they should make that calculation
beforehand.
Well,
wait a minute. Maybe they had to get everybody on the.
Are you calling me fat?
Yeah.
I was a little, it was like, and I, by the way, I didn't scream and I didn't fight. I just got off the plane, as I think most people would do. They just, well, okay. And then two people got on who weren't appreciably slimmer than I am. So it was, you know, what I realized in hindsight, it was a lie. It was a white lie. It was a lie. You know, they probably had somebody. I was flying standby. My wife and I are flying standby with a higher, you know, this is all. This is what the other, somebody else has pointed out. This really is also a measure of what's happened in this country with inequality. If you're wealthy enough, you never get bumped. You never have problems. And unfortunately, if you don't make that mark, you really, everybody else has to survive, you know, kind of this dog eat dog world. I realized somebody who had higher flight status than I did, you know, a 1K flyer or something had said, I'd like to get on this plane. And they said, well, sure. Well, let's get rid of Leo. And they lied. They lied. They said I was, you know, that the flight was over. Come on. I didn't have any checked luggage. That's the main reason they got rid of me. They didn't have to take my planes off, my bags
that's
off.
True.
Yeah.
And Lisa's not heavy. I'm heavy, but I'm not that heavy.
Pro tip. Check a bag.
Yeah. And by the way, how would you know?
There's so many other things.
Is the plane sitting on a scale? I mean, what is it like? Oh, yeah. Leo's 10 pounds. You're 10 pounds less. Get her on. That didn't happen. So this is not, I don't think it's unheard of. And I think most people would just say, yeah, fine. Okay. But Dr. Dow apparently did not want to get off. And
this is a chain of things, right? This is, as so many of these disasters are, it's a series of things that went wrong.
That's right.
From the overbooking system to him being given a seat assignment.
Of the airport security force.
Exactly.
Exactly right. So it's all the way down.
And there is a new sense of entitlement, I think, in some cases in law enforcement that anything goes now. We're back on top. You're a journalist. You're both journalists. I'm curious because one of the things I've noticed with this story is it's very hard to get the facts. And there's lots of rumors around it. And you would think this would be pretty straightforward, that a reporter could go in and find out exactly what happened, and we know what the facts were. But even now, days later, there's still, was that the same David Dow that was a professional gambler? There's all this confusion around it. It's still not, you know, why was he bumped? Well, they said maybe it was...
I think it's partly because there was such fixed information at the start. Like, you could see the video. It was
pretty
darn clear what was happening. Right. And then you had to figure out every other detail around it. And those get more fuzzy. But, like, we got this huge head start. Reporters. Right.
But video lies, too.
Well, yeah.
Video lies, too. Angles.
So it takes some time to disentangle.
Yeah.
But all the reporting around it was catching up to the fact that we'd all already seen this video. And it was, pretty obvious what happened.
Okay.
And then you get into this point where once it's out there and it becomes a phenomenon, everybody involved is battening down the hatches. So we heard from people on the plane because they don't have a vested interest in this. But United is managing a PR disaster and doing it very badly for a couple of days. And then you have the police, where there are the people involved who are now worried about their jobs and getting tangled in this. You've got the management of the Chicago Police Department that doesn't like that their people were being put in this situation. You've got the guy and his lawyer, and they're obviously thinking now about suing United. So then, as a journalist, like, the core sources are not going to be necessarily very forthcoming. So you've got kind of eyewitnesses, but the eyewitnesses are very much like the video, right? There's no context around it. We only know what we saw in the video and what they report they saw.
But all that's very normal for any story. It's just interesting that everyone's talking about this one this week.
And if people felt generally happy about how they got treated by the airlines the last decade, it wouldn't have, right? I mean, this is a symptom.
We were all getting ready.
Exactly.
For this
waiting
moment.
For the latest outrage.
And I should point out, initially, United stock price, I mean, they could have given the guy $1,000, $10,000, $5,000. They could have given $1 million because their stock price ended up tanking by almost $1 billion in the first few hours. As you pointed out, Liz, it came back and then it went. Initially, I think some investors, and this was also in Twitter, on Wall Street said, oh, wait a minute, that's good. They're overbooked. Good news. And so they started buying up the stock again.
Yeah.
It's a deal. And then it started to sink in, and it has, as it has over the remaining 5 or 6 days, that this isn't probably very good
It looks like it's still dancing right around $70 a share.
It's $69.11 right now at its peak the day of. It was $72. So it's $3 a share. They've got 314 million shares outstanding. That's almost $1 billion. That's a lot of market cap.
That chart out and see if it really has an impact.
Well, and then really the question is going to be in reservations over the next year, right? Do people say, you know, because everybody
is it actually worth it to you to pick the $20 more flight?
Nobody loves an airline really. It's not maybe as bad as your cable company, but it's not like there's huge affection there in general. There are occasional brands that break through.
But, and then they go away, like Virgin.
But and I read another story.
That's sad.
There's actually another great story that's tech related about this, which is I think maybe the Washington Post wrote a piece about how one of the problems is, unlike things like restaurants, where you have questions of there are dimensions to the ratings, right? Of service and the quality of the food and things like that. With airlines, all of the shopping options that everybody uses are completely boiled down to price. In fact, even to the point where a lot of those websites, if there are hidden fees, you often don't see those. So you pick a cheap flight and find out it's actually going to cost you $50 more because you have to check a bag or something like that. And so there's a question there, like, is there a product that you could make for people who are shopping for a flight that integrates stuff other than just the price? Because in the end, is it worth it to you to pay $20 or $30 more for a better airline?
Isn't that what Hipmunk does? They have their agony index.
See, there's a good
they
idea.
Do,
yeah.
But
it's more length
about,
of flight
like,
and number of stops. I think they could easily add to
they
the
should
agony.
Incorporate some other factors.
Because imagine if you get data about customer satisfaction on for a whole carrier or for specific flights, and you integrate that, wouldn't that freak the airlines out if they knew that like their placement was dropping in the shopping rankings because they're doing a bad job of keeping people happy? It could help. Maybe I'm being too optimistic here, but it's absolutely true that if all you do is sort on price, this is the situation you get.
It also shows the power of social media and the instantaneous power of social media to hurt your stock price and hurt your reputation. In 2008, if all you have to say is United Airlines, and people will remember it now, 9 years ago. Oh, yeah, that's the airline that broke the guy's $1,300 guitar. Remember that?
Google like a
United
song
Guitar.
About
it. He wrote a song about it. It was a $3,500 a guitar. The guy shared his upset on social media, wrote a song about it. United breaks guitars. And I tell you what, people, by the way, he's playing a very nice
17 million views.
Yeah. I'll tell you, this is the power of social media. And on the one hand, I celebrate it. Look at this is consumers, you know, getting back at big companies and we have a voice now. But it can also be misused in some horrific ways as well.
Yeah, I
don't know if on the balance it's good or bad, but certainly thanks to social media, we all have a voice. He got a new guitar, several new guitars, I think, after he broke his guitar.
Yeah, I think Dr. Dow is going to be okay.
And I'm sure Dr. Dow is going to be made whole, right?
Yeah, I just hope that they change the policy. I mean, they've already started, but they change the policies because the goal is minimize this sort of thing.
Once you're on the airplane, you shouldn't be thrown off the airplane.
I agree with that. I think if you're in a seat, that's the end of
that's
it.
That's really bad.
Yeah.
You know, that's about the worst thing you can do.
I mean, they had a breakdown. Why are you boarding people if you know that you've overbooked the flight? Well, and the answer is that they didn't know that crew was going to show up. And so then they're trying to pull people off. And the answer there is to say, sorry, we aren't going to pull anybody off this flight.
But then the crew is delayed.
Yeah,
and the flight coming out of Louisville, which is waiting for that crew, gets canceled.
Yeah.
And it's a ripple effect, and it's a lot of not just United that's disadvantaged, but a lot of real people.
Well, then you hold open those seats and don't sell them, and take a loss on those seats in order to have the flexibility. Right? There are ways around it, but they're not willing to do it.
Must be a better way. That's the bottom line. And I think Delta actually has an interesting angle on that. Hey, thanks for being here. It's nice to have you. I know it's Easter.
Happy Easter.
And so sometimes hard to book a show on a holiday like this, but apparently both of you aren't that religious. So thank you for being here. No, you had your Easter egg hunt. Did you have one this morning with your kid?
Yesterday afternoon.
Yesterday afternoon, yeah. I did. And you, how about you? Did you paint eggs or do anything?
We got some chocolate bunnies and I made a big breakfast. And yeah, there was some stuff in an Easter basket for my kids. So yeah, it was
my favorite tradition during Easter is looking at pictures of horrifying Easter bunnies and the terrified kids sitting on their laps. There's something just scary about about Easter bunnies.
I have a friend who bought an Easter bunny costume, and that was his favorite thing too.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Donnie Darko. It's just, it's just not a good. This is my favorite one. Creepy Easter bunnies. There's actually a whole website scaring the chocolate out of innocent children. wow, that one is, that's just really bad. That's just, that is just one mangy bunny. And those kids, they're rightly scared. Our show today brought to you by a great company. And I think a company that is often underestimated. Everybody knows the name Cloudflare. That's, you know. If I asked 10 different people, they'd get 10 different answers to what Cloudflare does. Many people know Cloudflare offers DOS protection. So your website can't be brought to its knees by a sudden influx, whether as an attack or just a lot of interest in what you're doing, of traffic. But it does a whole lot more than that. It really is the operating system for the edge of the internet. More than 6 million websites, APIs, apps, and SaaS companies use Cloudflare. Cloudflare lets you load fast, stay secure, and weather whatever the internet throws at you. And it's easy to set up, less than 5 minutes, and there's a free tier. And I want to tell you why there's a free tier in a little bit. But yes, you can use Cloudflare for your site right now, absolutely free. So Cloudflare is also what we call a CDN, a content distribution network. And maybe some of you, probably podcasters, are aware of it in that regard, because they have more than 100 data centers all over the world, which cache your content, moving it closer to the people who want it, so it loads faster. But you can also get real great advantages by using Cloudflare, like IPv6. You know, the mobile web uses IPv6. Your site will load faster on mobile if it's IPv6 compatible. And Cloudflare, in 5 minutes, can make you IPv6 compatible. HTTPS rewrites keep you secure. Your domain automatically configures to use HTTP2. That gives you about a 30% performance boost without anything else. End-to-end, Cloudflare speeds up every request to your site. Performant DNS, it does DNS, caching, content optimization, load balancing, and a lot more. Plans range from free to $20 a month, $200 a month, and of course, big, big, big websites, they've got custom plans for you. But the why, you might ask, why is it free? The free tier helps them because it's basically crowdsourcing their WAF, Wide Area Firewall, I guess is that's what it stands for, WAF. So they have 6 million domains on their network. If you see trouble or you request a new custom WAF rule, they analyze it, and then they will then apply it to every other domain on their network. Kind of like Google does with spam. When you notify Gmail that you got a spam, it helps everybody fight that spam. The WAF, the Wide Area Firewall, helps everybody be more secure. So they love having you as a free customer. It helps them improve their protection for everybody. Cloudflare's free plan is part of their mission to help build a better internet, one where builders and makers and writers and everyone with a good idea can reach a global audience. You're part of the neighborhood watch on the edge of the internet. We have a nice offer for you. One of their best guys, one of their best technicians is doing their support engineers is doing a seminar you can join for free. There's Jameson Sundell. He's awesome. He's funny. He's smart. And he understands better than anybody how Cloudflare works. Just for Twit listeners, we're the only ones who have this. We're going to arrange for you to have join a free live chat with Jameson. If you go to cloudflare.com/twit and sign up today, do the free tier. You'll still get it. Won't cost you anything. Making the internet work the way it should. We love these guys, and I'm really thrilled that they can be a part of our family. cloudflare.com/twit. All right, enough of scary Easter bunnies. you know, this is a weird week. It seemed like there were 18 stories about Qualcomm. Qualcomm is suing Apple, which sued Qualcomm.
It's a chain of pain.
So Apple accuses, I don't even know, should we do this story? Apple accuses Qualcomm of overcharging for its license fees. Everybody uses Qualcomm. You kind of almost have to use Qualcomm. But so Apple this time in the iPhone 7 outsourced not just to Qualcomm, but they started using some Intel chips. Intel had acquired a company that makes these are the broadband radio chips, right? The baseband radios. And Qualcomm, of course, invented CDMA. So if you want to have a CDMA phone, if you want a phone that works on Verizon and Sprint with a CDMA network, you got to go to Qualcomm. Apple sued, saying Qualcomm's overcharging. They sued them for $1 billion for use of their patents and failing to make required payments. Then FTC sued Qualcomm, charging it violating antitrust law. Now Qualcomm's suing Apple, saying, you sicked the FTC on us. And, oh, by the way, we're pissed off because when you put the Intel radio in the iPhone 7 and benchmarks showed that the Intel radio was slower than our radio, what did you do? You slowed our radio down.
Slowed down their radio, yeah.
And you know what? I'd be pissed if I were Qualcomm. I don't know if it's...
There's a financial judgment to be had there, but Apple, what Apple didn't want is sort of like phone seeking, where they, right, like people were buying the Qualcomm phone and returning it if it was an Intel chip.
So I have the Intel chip in my phone.
Right. So it's naturally that speed.
It's naturally slow.
Yeah.
But if you had the Qualcomm chip, I wouldn't begrudge you.
Yeah, I know.
By the way, this is LTE. This is for data.
Isn't this all just part of the grand game of whatever they're doing to fire shots off of each other's bows in this case? Because Qualcomm, because they have patents on a standard, there's sort of this implication legally that they're supposed to offer them for a fair price, Apple's contention here is that they're offering it for an unfair price.
Right.
I don't know.
Qualcomm says, and this is actually, this of all the things in this, these multiple suits, is the one that seems to me to be kind of bad, that they say that Apple tried to prevent them from making their own performance claims. They tried, in other words, prevent that Qualcomm from telling people, no, our chips are fast. It's just Apple's slowing them down. Now, if that's the case, then Qualcomm might have it. That seems to be kind of a nasty thing to do. Yeah,
they are not happy with each other.
Do you like how I did that?
That was
pretty slick.
People are still impressed by my Surface Studio. Hey, speaking of Windows, Windows Creators Update came out this week. I know you don't care at all.
I so don't care.
actually, nobody should care. I have it here. I don't notice much, except that there's a new 3D Paint that Microsoft is offering. And this is kind of an interesting story because Microsoft, I think, I should just type it in. I'm never going to find it. Microsoft is really pushing 3D on Windows. And this, I think, goes to HoloLens. You know, they have a holographic technology, the HoloLens.
So you're going to be creating in Paint something that would show up in the HoloLens? That's kind of a stretch.
I think they want to get people used to. See, I just created a flat sphere, and how do I must have okay, well, so I don't really understand this, but maybe that's the point, is so that we start to understand you know, how 3D works. Yeah, because they want to create a generation, they're really aiming this as kids, a generation that creates and thinks in three dimensions, not two dimensions, because they think, and I don't disagree with them, that the future computer interfaces will be augmented reality. They'll be HoloLens-like. Mm. They have a version of Windows, because Windows holographic, where the menus float in space. You can look around them. Everything is now kind of in space, 3D. So I think the goal with this is to get, and they showed a lot of kids, they want schools to adopt this, a lot of kids to be using 3D software to get used to it so that they can generate content.
That sounds like either a really good idea, or it would be just totally confusing.
Well, you can see, maybe it's because I'm too young, but you can see that I'm completely confused by this program. They do offer a website, a Remix website, where you can download 3D models and play with them. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I think they're really trying to get educators to adopt this. They're hoping that this will really... Here's Remix 3D. Maybe I can get a... these are people... Actually, you know what? If this is any measure, if you go to Remix 3D, they have models uploaded by kids. 3D models and stuff. Or somebody. I don't know who's uploading this. This is... Maybe it's not a kid. It just looks like a kid. Did it. This ties in... So that's the Creators Update. You will start to get it if you have Windows 10 over the next few months. I actually had to force the update. But they give you a way to do that in the update thing. But Microsoft also announced a hardware event May 2nd that they're saying, well, the invite has the hashtag Microsoft EDU. So this is a Microsoft hardware event that I am guessing is targeted at education, right? Microsoft EDU. This might be a little bit disappointing to people who are looking forward to maybe new Surface Pro tablets or new, some people even dream on, have thoughts that they might be doing a new Microsoft phone, a Windows phone. But no, I think it's going to be an EDU event. We will cover it. We'll be there May 2nd at 6 a.m. Pacific. I'll be there. I don't think I can get anybody to join me for this event. But Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley from our Windows Weekly show will be there. Microsoft told The Verge, do not expect a Surface phone. Do not expect a Surface Pro device. What I think we're going to see, and I think the consensus is, Microsoft, I think it was leaked out that there's something called Windows Cloud. And the consensus is Microsoft, now that they're starting to be beaten in education by the Chromebook, they were dominant in education. The Chromebook has started to outsell Windows as well as Mac.
Yep. And iPad.
In education, as well as iPad.
Yeah.
And the thought is they're going to Microsoft's working on a low-cost Chromebook-like version of Windows and Windows hardware to sell into schools.
And that's what this event's about?
I think so, which would be kind of boring, but but it just shows you how critical the education market is. You start to lose that.
It's a challenge, right? Because most schools don't have a lot of money to spend on technology.
So it's got to be low end.
But it's crucial. It's viewed as a crucial long game by these companies. So you got to balance. I think that's one of Apple's challenges is Apple's entire business is based on generally having products in the high end, medium to high end, not low cost products. And you can't do that and also, or at least it's very hard to do that and also get into schools. But if the long game is you want people comfortable with your tech and to have your child's tech influence maybe your home tech because you want to have them in sync, you need to play that game. And it's, you know, Apple has struggled with that. Google has done very well with Chromebooks. And Microsoft, yeah, I can see how Microsoft is frustrated that they used to be the cheaper solution in education and now Google has undercut them.
Until everything goes 4D.
Yes.
Yeah,
then they will be back.
Then Microsoft's on top.
Once everybody's putting on goggles to go to school, Microsoft has a lead there.
Apple's share on... So, first of all, device makers shipped 12.6 million mobile computers. That's laptops, tablets, and smartphones to schools last year. 12.6 million units. That's up from 10.7 million units a couple of years back. But percentages have shifted dramatically. It's 58% Chrome OS,
yep.
22% Microsoft Windows, and I'm trying to find the Mac OS is 5%.
That's pretty amazing that it changes. It's changed so fast because it's device-based. It's not like you just switch over to a different OS on the iPads your school bought last year.
Yeah, this is selling a lot of fairly cheap Chromebooks, which a school looks at that and says we can outfit our class with a Chromebook or an iPad. And
I can't imagine they hang on to them for less than like $5.
Well, this is what's interesting because in 2014, 26% were iOS, mostly iPads. It's down to 14% in 2016. So a big drop. Does that mean...
That's actually one of the reasons that new iPad exists, I think.
Yeah, the $329
the new iPad whatever it is, fifth generation, is like the iPad Air... brought back and the price drastically cut, and that seems to be Apple saying here's a product that we can sell to schools that's going to be under $300 per unit for schools. It's still not as cheap as a Chromebook, but it gets them maybe in the game in a way that they haven't been the last few years because they've been driving toward the high end.
I love that like the kids of America are shaping the product roadmaps for these companies. That's actually kind of cool.
Well, and but it's also the future for these companies, right? Because if a kid starts using one of these devices in high school, the presumption is,
or grade school,
the presumption, I don't know, do you think that's true? That they will then go out into the world and they'll expect to be using Macs or Windows or Chromebooks?
I'd like to apply some skepticism to it, but in the early 80s, Apple gave every single public school in California.
Everybody had an Apple II.
An Apple II, and I got an Apple II, so I may be the product of that program.
Did you see, guys, that the Internet Archive just put out a simulator of that? I think just like
Apple
the last
II
day
simulator?
Or two.
Yeah.
No, I think it's the original Mac,
the original
actually,
Mac?
That you can now run in a browser, which is pretty amazing. Just in a browser.
I paid... $2,500.
Yeah, it runs in a browser, like with no plugins now. It's just JavaScript, and yeah, it's amazing.
Wow.
So yeah, I think there is something to that, that you become comfortable.
Yeah.
And if I was Apple, I'd be saying I want them to be comfortable with tablets, not laptops, right? And if you want to be comfortable with a laptop, a Chromebook can do that, and that gets you comfortable with Google services as well, which I think... is, you know, my son's got an iPad one-to-one in his school, but they're also all using Google Classroom. So in the end, I think Google would be perfectly happy for that because Google's classroom tools are very good.
Hmm. You've really got to love the Internet Archive. Isn't that amazing? Is what they should be doing, right? Mac OS System 7 compilation.
Yeah, and you can also
just
tap on...
It runs HyperCard.
Yeah.
I could run HyperCard again. I might cry.
And you literally just tap that power button at the top of the screen, and that is not like a video embed. That is an emulator.
Oh, my God.
And your web page is
now
running
it.
A Mac.
What? Really this is
cool.
A Mac now? It's booting?
That's it.
Oh, my God. The memory test?
You zoomed in a little bit there.
You imagine this monitor is not the
you
same
don't have
size.
To exit out a full screen.
Apparently, the resolution of the... the Mac is a little higher than I can handle. Wow.
I'm sure that's the problem.
And by the way, welcome back to the watch icon. Here's the hard drive.
Right?
There's something in my trash. You think they're hiding something in there? ASF. What do you think that is?
I liked HyperCard so much that when I was in college, I tried to do a presentation on it, even though it was like irrelevant. And it should come back.
It's actually faster than the original Mac.
I think it is. And it's in a browser.
It's running JavaScript. It has BB Edit Lite. I'm sure Rich Siegel's thrilled about that.
Sure.
Mac Draw, Mac Paint, Microsoft Excel, Microsoft Word, Works,
this
Orion.
This was the game we played in the dorm room in college.
This is Breakout, right?
No, it's Shuffle Puck. It's it's air hockey. You didn't hit it very hard, Lee. You're going to get owned.
Crawling.
Is he going to slam
You're
it?
You're going to get schooled is by he
gonna
this guy, yeah.
Watch
is
out.
He gonna,
ah! Yeah. Broke the glass. I can't play this
hit it
game.
Hard.
Okay, hit it really hard and spin it. Spin it.
There you go. Yeah.
Can you do that with like your pencil or your finger or something?
God, we played this way too much. The sequel to this, you played against different characters in a sci-fi cafe.
There's a
cafe.
Little buzz. Like it's also emulating the grounding loop because I haven't plugged my speakers in properly. Wow, this is amazing. So, kids, if you never got to play with Dad's Macintosh...
Guess what? It's just your browser can be a
Wow.
I wonder how much usage will just be like this week or if it'll keep going. If it's just going to...
Well,
like
the nice thing
novelty or
about the
more.
Impermanence of all this and needing emulators, the great thing now is if you remember a piece of software from back then, you can do a Google search and like literally one page away, press play, and there's that app, which is amazing, right? Instead of having to do what you do now, which is find an emulator, then go to a random place on the internet where they have ROMs and install the ROMs, and then find the disk images, right? Instead, you just press play.
We had Ron Gilbert on Triangulation on Monday. I don't know if you know the name, but he did Humongous Games.
Oh, yeah.
He was at LucasArts. He did Maniac Mansion. He's releasing an 8-bit program called Thimbleweed Park. But I asked him, you know, my kids grew up on Freddy Fish and, you know, all these Humongous Games. They were great games. And I know where they would like to play them. I said, you can play them. They have what's called Scum VM because the Scum was the scripting editor that he wrote for those games, starting with Maniac Manor. And I said, how do you feel about emulators? And he said, I think it's great. He did not feel like it was a ripoff. You know, I think probably the big companies like Bandai and Namco, who really don't like these emulators.
Until they can resell them somewhere else on a console as a classic game product.
But
right? They
don't like the idea that somebody's going to play their game for free, download the ROMs. He said, no, that's great. And I said, so you agree with Roger Ebert and others who say that video games are really... cultural. They're an art form from the 80s, the 90s, the aughts, and they ought to be preserved. And the real problem, he agreed with me, the real problem is you're not going to be able to get an Atari 2600.
Exactly.
You're not going to be able to get a Coleco.
There was just a story about the Apple II archive is trying to find original games and original software because a lot of the versions that are in the archives now are the cracked versions. They're the pirated versions where the copy protection was able to be subverted. And the problem with that, it turns out, is that sometimes the act of removing the copy protection has changed the binary to the point where things aren't quite what the original was and it can actually introduce bugs.
So you have to leave the copy
protection. And all those discs are dying, right? They're all gonna they're all rapidly aging.
Been out in the sun too long.
So they put out like the word, like, if you've got original discs, original Apple II discs, we want them. Because we want to be able to preserve those in their original form
they
before they're gone.
They need to the physical disk.
Well, they need to get the data off the disks in a way that they can preserve it. Because right now, the only version they've got of that game is the cracked version. And they want the real version, untouched, and with no crack screen put on it by whoever broke the copy protection. They want the originals. Yeah. But this is true. I mean, I was just at a conference where one of the speakers talked about how software developers are, you know, are like ice sculptors. They make this stuff, but you've got to keep in mind it's ephemeral.
Yeah.
And without emulators, without things like this to preserve this stuff, it will just go away. And like the iPhone is a good example where as every version of the iPhone drops support, like the talk is that this fall 64-bit apps will be mandated on all iPhones and iPads, that anything that hasn't been updated and is a 32-bit app will just go away. And how do you run that old version of that old app from 5 years ago? Eventually, there will be an emulator, presumably, but will people have those binaries now that it's all in the cloud? Mm-hmm. Are those files going to exist anywhere?
That's why this is so appropriate for the Internet Archive to have a Mac OS emulator and to be able to run these programs, because there are people now who never heard of HyperCard, have never used HyperCard, and they really ought to have experience of HyperCard so they understand, you know, this seminal software.
In many cases,
I mean, it's good that it exists.
In many cases, the
You're
software
not nostalgic about it.
The developers don't even have it anymore.
I am a nostalgic person, but I don't think I'm going to spend all day in this.
It's interesting. You know, get Word 5 in there and just write in your
no distraction.
I was just typing in BB Edit. It actually was faster than in my original Mac Plus.
I agree with you, though, that it's a wonderful thing that the Internet Archive exists.
For history's sake, if nothing else.
And I think I think Bill Atkinson probably would be honored that HyperCard. I'll have to ask him. He's been on before, but I'd be honored that this exists. But he's way beyond that. He's not thinking. It's nostalgia for him. Yeah. It's old hat for him.
Well,
it might
it's
be
history,
like me
too.
Saying, let's bring back the screensaver. Oh, never mind. We did.
I think history is a part of this too, which is knowing, like, what was it like? What was that app like? Sometimes you write a story about, and history is boring for a lot of people, but, you know,
next time someone does a period piece movie about the late 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
They will have accurate stuff on their fake screens.
I actually wrote a piece not too long ago, and it was about the sounds that Apple puts in the Mac, which I know seems really boring, but it's kind of hasn't updated its beep
piece.
Sounds in like 10 years. And one of the things I did was I found emulated versions because I needed to figure out, like, when did they get introduced? And you've got to get like System 7.6 and OS 8 and OS 8.1 and in order to find it. And like, I could not have done that story. I don't have old computers with old OSs laying around. It was all done with the emulators.
But to underscore,
so thank goodness they exist.
Your point, Liz, I think the companies and creators don't look backwards so much. Maybe we don't even. It's part of history. But look at this. Like Nintendo, which made this. This was the most popular product Nintendo made in
years.
And possibly, you know, it's up there with the Switch. I'm sure the Switch is bigger. This is the Nintendo $60 Nintendo Classic. And it's classic. It fit in the palm of your hand, but it played, you know, all these games. I can't remember 30 or 40. Yeah, 30 games.
That's a really good counterpoint.
And they killed it. They killed it. Article from Business Insider speculating. This is Ben Gilbert speculating on why they killed it. Nintendo said, in a statement to IGN, throughout April, Nintendo of America territories will receive the last shipments of the NES Classic for this year. If you want this system, check with retail outlets regarding availability. We understand it's been difficult to find. For that, we apologize. We greatly appreciate the support and interest. But that's it. So here's at least his theories of why. First, it was never intended to be a product. It's merely a commercial.
Okay.
Is that the case? I mean, if you've got a $60 product you can't keep in stock, whether you think it's not, it's more than a commercial, it is, right? Nintendo has a history of creating collector's items. Really, it goes back to their history as a card company, playing card company, right? And so they have made a collector's edition, and maybe they didn't notice they said this year. Maybe next year they'll bring it back. They do have the Switch, and they want you to buy the Switch.
And won't there be a virtual console on the Switch that'll let you buy all those old games and play it?
That's kind of interesting if they do that.
Which is just an emulator, but it's an official, allowed emulator.
Nintendo is very protective, he says, of their classic games.
So don't let anybody play them?
Yeah, so far none of this is really holding up.
Okay, well, how about this? Nintendo wants to sell you classic games on the Switch.
That's
there will
the
be a virtual, as you said, a virtual console service. And yeah, at some point, if there's, you know, what they did is they created demand for these games, and now they took it away and said, oh, look, we can do it on the Switch. Interesting. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Liz Gaines is here from 60DB, 60DB.co. If you don't know about it,
I have some updates for you on that too.
I would love to hear it when we come back. If you haven't yet joined, it's free. Just go, sign up. 60db.co. You can listen on your computer. You can listen on your phone. But the best way, in my opinion, if you have an Echo, it's awesome. It suddenly makes your Echo the best radio you ever had. I mean, it's just awesome. And the best Apple site. I love it. And I don't know why Apple didn't invite you to that briefing that they had.
I'm not sure I could have gone, but I would have loved to have been invited.
We were wondering. We thought Jason would have been great.
That was a super interesting selection of people.
It was.
What's your theory on that?
I think it was people that
this is like insider journalist talk.
Well,
but
so the idea is you're giving them a briefing, but you're not approving their stories. They get to write whatever they want. So if you're going to invite, from Apple's perspective, you pick people you trust to not misrepresent what you're going to tell them.
Mm-hmm. They're not all Apple fanboys.
No. But
they are going to...
They're all people that Apple has...
They understand.
...believes that whatever Apple says in that meeting will be conveyed in an accurate way. That they're not going to make something...
It's super interesting that they were all individuals, right? Like, no one was associated with...
Yeah, it wasn't like the New York Times was here. Like, it was John Gruber.
Apple PR has always been about personal relationships. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you could see it with this example.
Does that
example,
mean that
because
they don't have relationships right now with the big publications?
No, I
the
think
same way?
It may be to a certain extent
more.
It's possible that the these are the people that they're more comfortable with. It's certainly they weren't picking brands, right? Because you could look at the brands who were there and say, like, the
Mac Crunch,
BuzzFeed readers don't generally care about the Mac Pro. It's pointless,
right?
But those are those, but it's
they
not
invited Ina, not Axios.
Exactly,
it was more
right.
about Ina Fried than it
yeah.
was about
and
Axios.
Matt Panzerino and John Gruber. And you could argue that they could have just invited John Gruber, and that would have been fine, because his audience is probably the best match
for the
people who care. Yeah. But they didn't want to just invite one person. So they invited people that they trust, which doesn't mean that they're viewed as mouthpieces. But that is touchy, right, where it's like they're being given a few days to go away and write this story and convey it. And Apple has no say on what they say. So they're picking people they
Somebody
they,
said
they
on
think
one of
trust.
Our shows, it might have been actually Paul Theriot of all people on the Windows show, that Apple picked people who weren't going to ask dumb questions.
I think that's also true. Those are all very smart people. This is why I've had a couple of people say, well, why weren't you there? I was like, I don't know. They didn't invite me. But they did invite five extremely good journalists. They are all very smart. They know
two
the subject.
Them, all things DLMs.
Yeah, absolutely.
They would have invited Walt, but he's retiring.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah,
are you guys going to do a – I know you're not there anymore, but are you going to do a party or –
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different projects going on to
it'll
celebrate
be, it'll
Walt.
Be the retirement that goes on and on, I bet. Well, 47 years in the business. You ought to have a nice retirement. Huh?
Absolutely. Yeah,
he should do a couple victory laps.
Time to pick snacks.
Oh, sweet.
What? Yeah.
What?
This is my favorite part of the show.
Do you want zesty nacho curls, blueberry almond quinoa bites, garlic plantains? It's okay. I won't hold it against you.
I love garlic.
Or I want to hear
my options.
Peanut butter graham jam or nutty power clusters. These are really good. They're nut squares, walnuts, almonds, and cashews.
Give me the peanut butter, man.
You want the peanut butter graham
have
jam?
It. Peanut butter is my favorite food.
Sorry, Liz.
Yoink. I'll go with the garlic.
Garlic plantains? These are Nature Box. These
I
are
love
the
plantains.
Greatest snacks ever. Now, I'm going to point out a few features of the Nature Box. First of all, it comes in a nice box. To your door once a month, a selection of snacks you can pick ahead of time. Tell them whether you like sweet, salty, spicy, you get your choice. They're all designed to be good stuff. No artificial colors, flavors, no artificial sweeteners. Delicious snacks. They kind of pride themselves being snack designers. So they have new snacks all the time, 100 snacks so far. If at any time you don't like a snack, they'll send you a new one. It's the snack of the month club. What could go wrong, right? You can order as much as you want, as often as you want. You don't have to wait for the monthly box. This is new, and no minimum purchase required, and you can cancel anytime. So they've really made it much more flexible. All of these bags are easy open, but they're also resealable. So, you know, sometimes you open a bag of chips, and you feel like you have to eat the whole thing, because what are you going to do with a half bag of chips? These are nice-sized bags. They're delicious. If you read the ingredients, they're all super healthy, super good. Big Island pineapple. What's in it? Pineapple. That's all. Just pineapple. I don't know what I'm opening here. Oh, blueberry almond quinoa bites. Wow. Roasted cashews, crispy rice, pumpkin seeds, roasted almonds, dried blueberries, rice syrup, cane sugar, quinoa, palm oil, sesame seeds, natural blueberry flavor, and sea salt. That's all. That's all.
Just this one they think is so good you're going to finish it all in one month. It doesn't have the resealable.
Yeah, they don't bother with the resealable on the Zesty Nacho Curls. They know nobody's ever
I think
just,
that probably
can't just eat
that's
one.
Probably a good one.
Mm. Oh, that's good. You wouldn't expect a quinoa bite to be.
Yeah.
But that's really good. No, you're going to like it.
Yeah, all right.
All right. Pardon me while I... Right now, you're going to save even more because NatureBox is offering our fans 50% off your first order. How about that? Go to naturebox.com/twit. I'm going to open the nacho curls. What the hell?
Okay.
These are so good. You want these. And you know what? If you're a parent, you'll be much happier at your kids eating these than, you know, the other guys. These are like, you know what these are like. Like the other guys, but they're good and good for you. naturebox.com/twit. Okay, I can't really say they're good for you. But, hey, give me back those nacho curls.
Okay.
naturebox.com/twit. For 50% off. I love this part of the show.
Let me give it to us.
Look at Snell.
Come on. Bring it over.
My precious.
There's Zesty. I see what they are.
Yes. They're like, you know, the other brand. These actually have a little more going on.
I taste the zestiness. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. It's baked right in.
Woo. All right, Liz Gaines, what's going on with 60 dBs? What's new?
Oh, so I wanted to tell you. So last time I was on the show, it was pretty awesome. A bunch of people came and checked out and said they came from Twit.
Good.
But a bunch of them were upset because they wanted to use the app on Android. And now we have an Android beta.
Woohoo!
I didn't want to come back until we had an Android beta for you guys.
Thank you.
But now we do.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's the whole app is going to look different in about a week. We have a really cool refresh coming, but it works great now.
You know, I never ding anybody for not having an iOS app or an Android. Apps are hard.
Mm-hmm.
Apps are much harder. We spent $80,000 to do a Twit app. And notice there's no Twit app?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm never getting that money back.
Wait, so, did you ever release it?
No. It wasn't. I didn't feel like it was good enough to release. And we said, well, thanks so much. See you later.
Yeah.
$80,000 later. So I understand making an app is unfortunate. We're very lucky because we have fans who make apps. There's apps on every platform for Twit, but none of them are ours. They were all written by fans, so thank you, because it's a lot of work. And in the way I kind of thought, it's good. We don't want to undermine the people who are generously giving their time and making apps. Let them make the apps. We don't want to be the app business. But thank you for making an Android app. That's fantastic.
I mean, it's been interesting, though. We also, we put the app out there, and we thought we were going to be this commuter app. Like, that's how I use it. I listen to 60 dB on the way in and back. Because, you know, you set it, you get in the car, and you don't have
to
look.
You got radio. You don't have to push a button or anything.
All this different stuff to us. But, more than half of our usage is over Wi-Fi. So I think by definition, not in the car. So that's part of why we're making the app more. It's going to look a little bit more like kind of like Spotify. You know, when you log in and there's do you want to have your morning coffee playlist? Yeah. Do you want to have your
I like that. Oh, whatever. I can't wait to get that.
So now you'll come in and you'll just be able to kind of pick your mood and get your more sports flavor.
Oh,
that's great.
I need that. I need multiple playlists. I can't wait. You're getting better and better all the time. I'm really, and it's free, right?
Looks really great.
Thanks. Yeah.
Isn't that neat?
I've got it on here. Yeah. It looks great.
Yeah. Check it out. It's, I really enjoy it.
In podcasts, the idea also that, you know, long podcasts are great if you want to dive in, but I also like the idea of getting somewhere where you've got short bits. That you get to mix together.
Yeah. Verboten for this show, but you don't have to be long.
Yeah. Well, I have a podcast that's 3 minutes long, and I have a podcast that's 30 minutes long. We do both. 2 hours.
You can do both.
See, there's quick hits, and then if you click the in-depth tab,
deep dive,
these are longer.
That's where Twit lives.
Right?
Yes.
Well, actually, we have Twit bits. So,
yeah,
so,
they have short stuff.
So they've very kindly used some of our short stuff.
And is that stuff that you guys are cutting up?
Yeah, in a lot of cases, we cut segments because we think people want to listen topic by topic, not necessarily someone's hour-long show.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
That's right.
And then that, then you have like a diversity of sources coming in. So stuff you wouldn't hear normally on the radio.
Right, because you can do Spotify for podcasts, but if every podcast is 2 hours long.
Oh, sorry. You're playing stuff. Sorry.
You're literally like, okay, Spotify, I can't wait to see what's next in 2 hours, which is not interesting.
It's not
right?
really the same, yeah.
So you must have stats on what people listen to and what people skip.
Yes. And I'm just actually like, that is the whole other side of this. This is so fascinating for me as a creator of content, is I can see when people drop off of my stories. Like,
oh, wow.
When I like,
I'm not sure I want to know that.
No, it's, I'll show you on the back end. We can do it for any show. So it's like, can you imagine though? Because I, before I did this, went to 6GDB, I was always writing. And so you know like how long someone spends on your web page, but this is like, you can,
you don't know which words turned them off.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and I'll redo a story sometimes. If I get a big drop off, I'll be like, oh, that was a bad lead because I lost like 20% of my audience in the last first 5% of the track. Yeah.
I'm curious if there was a spike in political stories and if now people are skipping them more.
Yeah, I do think that there's some Trump fatigue.
Like, I bet
people want to listen to other stuff
too.
I bet you. Yeah.
Very interesting.
You also don't want to listen to five stories about Syria. Like, you'd want the one good story about Syria.
Well, you're probably in your programming thinking about that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. But the world is kind of like turning towards what we're doing. Like, did you see that? So the New York Times has The Daily, which is a really great daily news podcast. Yep. And then NPR last week launched Up First.
A new one.
Yep. So like, people are kind of coming around to this, like, podcasts don't have to be once a week, not really news relevant, interesting conversations or like highly produced stuff. You can also do great daily relevant, you know, minute, hourly relevant, whatever it's going to be. It can be quick.
How long have we been doing TNT, our daily tech news update? 5 years? 6 years? I get no credit.
Daily's hard, though.
Daily's very hard, and it's hard to sell,
even.
Not that that determines what we do editorially, but it is determines whether we can make money on something. And it turns out daily podcasts, advertisers tend to want weekly. They don't want daily so much.
Oh, that's interesting.
So we do it anyway.
But listeners like to listen every day, right? Like, you don't want to have to remember when to come back for that show.
Right. Well, consistency, whether you're weekly or daily, is important. But I think people who watch TNT, our daily news show, love it. They've definitely built a very consistent. Of all our shows, that's interesting. It's the most consistent in terms of number of listeners every day.
Oh, really?
It varies very little.
The same people?
Well, we don't know that. We don't know who you are. But we do know the number. So I have to presume it's the same people. It's not going to, like, 5,000 people stopped listening and 5,000 started listening. It's a very consistent number, which is not the case of any of our other shows. They're much more volatile. Hmm. You know, you'll get a lot of listeners on one. Even in Twit, which is our highest, most listened to show. You know, some weeks it'll be 250,000. Some weeks it'll be 177,000. It could be that much of a difference in 1 week. And then, so it's very volatile. And I've never figured that out. It may be partly due to measuring technologies.
Could be.
Podcast measurement is not good.
Unless you've got an app, and then you've got the data from the app, which you guys do, which is
very
interesting.
Yeah, but we still only have our slice. But yeah, we can give you a representative sample in a really cool way.
Assuming that the 60dB audience is representative, then the numbers
as we grow. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. We're brand new.
I'll give you an example of a problem that we've never really solved. So many podcast players, it's more often in video, but it even happens in audio, will start multiple connections for the same show, right? So if you're listening to, or if you're watching Twit with Windows Media Player, it might open six different connections. That I don't want to count that as six people. I want to count that as one people. So I debounce it. I say, well, if they're all from the same IP address, that's one download, right? But there's also, it's also the case that a company like Microsoft has maybe one IP address for everybody in Microsoft.
Yeah.
So if 6,000 people listen to a show in Microsoft, they're still getting counted as one person. So there's a middle ground. So what we do for the debouncing is if it's the same IP address for an hour, within an hour, we'll say that's one person. As soon as it's into a second hour, we'll start. I think we've tried different lengths of time in an hour. I think is right, maybe 2 hours. Then we'll say that's another person. But we're still missing some large number of people at Microsoft, right? Because 1,000 people could download it in 1 hour. They would still count as one person. So it's a challenge. If you're not willing to invade people's privacies by putting, you know, making them use special apps or putting bugs in the podcast or whatever.
Yeah, people don't understand. It's not like the web where, you know, we're all talking about file downloads. And once you get into byte ranges, it gets really confusing. Right. And that's a measurement challenge for podcasting.
It has to go that direction, though. And it already is. I think there's like a lot more dynamic stuff.
Not on ours. Yeah.
Well, I think what's going to end up happening is that we'll get some things that are based on a sample, right? That somebody will have enough data. I think this is why Midroll, we're getting really inside here, but like Midroll, which is a major podcast ad network, bought Stitcher. And I think one of the things they benefit from that is they get the data from Stitcher and they get a better sample. Not the whole audience. Apple probably has the biggest slice of the podcast listening audience right now, and they're not giving that data out. But that gives Midroll at least a little view into how things are performing, because once you're in the app, you could theoretically follow individual in-app behavior, and then you know what they're playing and pausing and subscribing to and all of those things.
Yeah, our audience is so tetchy about privacy.
Quite right, yeah.
Rightly so, that I can't. Even if
and
I
the web
to,
has done
do
such
anything.
A bad job at it that podcasting can be kind of an oasis because they don't know about you what the websites know about you.
Look at how we're making progress in ad blockers. And now where was it? Princeton has come up with a way. This is a university has done research. It's a motherboard called it an ad blocking super weapon. So
tell me more.
You're scared now. Well, this unfortunately only affects banner ads on websites. But what they're doing is looking at a team at Princeton and Stanford looking at the actual content. This will block native content as well. So that's one of the things when websites know that you're not reading the ads, whether you're blocking them or not, you're not seeing them. So what they do is they make content that looks like it's real content, an article you might read. Except it's not. It's an ad posing as real content. We call it native content, and it's all the rage now. Again, we will never do that to you.
Yep.
But lots of sites, including some pretty well-known
have
sites.
Have some more NatureBox.
I know, right?
You know, there's nothing wrong.
Say, didn't we just experience a native ad?
That was not native content. That was an ad. It was clearly an ad, wasn't it?
Yeah, but you're here as part of your show doing it. I feel like that's a blurry line.
It's on the edge, right? I think for something to be native.
Come on. At home. You knew when I put out the Nature Box and we put up the lower third that was an ad.
It would be different if we suddenly were talking about how great quinoa was, and it comes in many forms, including the snack from Nature Box, which is sort of what native stuff is. It's like
trickery. It just means
I think it means trickery.
It does. Okay.
I think there's some. Well, yeah. I think if you talk to a salesperson, they'll say no.
The New York Times even says no, but it exists to trick people into reading content, thinking it's real editorial content when it's not. In any event, clearly these guys think it is because this will block native content. Also looks for there's many. Ads that, including Facebook ads, that bypass ad blockers that can't be easily blocked. This will do it. And the reason it works, and watch how long this loophole exists, is because the FTC says that ads have to be clearly labeled so that a human can recognize them. Well, that means...
So can a machine.
So can a machine. And so they're looking for those, weasel words that indicate, oh, what you're seeing is an advertisement. And so as long as the FTC continues to require advertisements to clearly be labeled, these ad blockers will work. As the author points out in his Motherboard piece on this, Motherboard is supported by ads. So Jason Kobler writes, so I'm probably biting the hand that feeds me talking about this. And this is part of the ethical issue, is we got to find a way to pay for content while not offending our viewers. And so that's why I bring this up, because... clearly we have to find it. I mean, we need to pay for our stuff. You need to pay for your stuff. But we don't also want to invade privacy. So I think there needs to be some sort of relationship between the content creators and the community so that we don't step on you and by giving you ads. So you can, if you're curious about the Princeton Stanford ad blocker, there's a Chrome extension that is not a final version. It's a proof of concept. It's not fully functional.
I'm skeptical of any declaration that this will end the war, though, because I feel like what this will do is
escalate
something that may actually be a little more insidious, which is it'll make the content, if you're using computer vision, right, then you could also use computer vision to design ad units and other content that is not as visible by the computer vision, which probably means that your banner blindness will go away.
Right.
So that they will create even more diabolical ad units that even humans can't determine.
Yeah, I feel like these Stanford and Princeton people should find something better to do with their time.
Oh!
If they're so smart, do something.
Right.
Maybe.
I think one of the big the shame of the web is that the advertising on it is so bad.
Yeah.
Because advertising, you know, advertising is not fundamentally bad. In fact, if you remember the great days of magazines, like, people loved the ads.
That's right.
Ads can impart information. They can be beautiful. They can be interesting. Good TV ads can be good. Advertising can be good. It doesn't have to be bad. But on the web, advertising is almost always bad. And because it's been driven to this lowest common denominator, auction-based kind of stuff. And so, I mean, it's a shame because I think like it's kind of ruining it for everyone that the web ads are so terrible.
You ought to have a Nature Box canola bite.
I enjoy.
Just for that.
Ding.
Netflix reaches 75% of streaming service viewers. This is actually a confusing stat that when I read it closely isn't exactly what you think it is. Of the people who stream... Of the people who use over-the-top streaming services, 75% of them have Netflix. Well, what a surprise. Pretty much everything you buy, whether it's a Chromecast, Roku, an
microwave.
Apple TV, a microwave, has Netflix on it. Your TV has Netflix on it.
Well, you have to pay for it.
That's true.
Yeah, so this is unclear whether it means Netflix is available or they're actually paying for it.
I mean, clearly Netflix has done really well here.
So that's the term. It's a term used in advertising, called reach. So we're talking about Netflix's reach. But then, if you talk about engagement, here's an interesting thing: number of days viewing. Actually, Hulu. I mean, Sling does
because that's being used as like regular TV.
Right.
So it makes sense that they don't have a lot of uptake in terms of the number of subscribers, but they spend a lot of time watching.
This is per month, by the way, days of viewing. So Sling is somewhere around 10 to 14 days a month, almost half the month viewing. So is Netflix.
Right.
HBO is considerably lower, maybe 5-6.
Because you're just watching like a show once a week or something like that.
And once Billions is over, I'm not going to watch it again.
You watch John Oliver or something like that.
Yeah, actually, Billions is on Showtime. So shows what I know.
Mm-hmm. Shame. No, so yeah, the idea is that of homes that have Wi-Fi, which is an interesting way of doing it, but I get that it's like you're sophisticated enough to have a Wi-Fi device in your home doing home internet.
Doesn't have Wi-Fi.
So of that, more than half are using over the top services, and 75% of those homes have Netflix.
Right. Right.
So it's, you know, Netflix is the leader, but YouTube is catching up.
Actually, I thought that Sling TV is doing that well was very interesting. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you don't see any of the other over-the-top services, PlayStation View, YouTube TV, Hulu. I guess Hulu's there.
But you got to like that number of engagement, right? That shows that those full service over-the-top can be really used. And that's good because then you feel like you're getting what you pay for.
I'm always about to cancel Netflix, and then I don't find something else to watch.
You know why? That's why they do those originals. They're always something new. We were just talking about The Crown.
Yeah, but that's like all they have now. It's so hard to find something
originals
that's not
are
the originals.
That's their strategy.
Yeah.
But they keep on having new ones to try and keep. It's HBO. It's the same thing, right?
Right.
It's no mistake that the season finale is followed by the season premiere of something else so that they can kind of keep you
yeah, but they are stretching it now, you know, with Westworld and Game of Thrones. Like,
yeah, Netflix is
out,
Netflix
low.
Is meanwhile is like makes so many shows that they're you like whole even, shows. Yeah. That
same
you
thing
don't
with
even
Amazon.
Know.
Same thing with Amazon.
Same with Amazon.
Amazon originals. Like, well, there's that. Was that? I mean, it's they keep coming up with new ones, and they're not. I have to say, quality level. So it's an interesting question. Do you make more of a lower quality, or do you make fewer of a higher quality? HBO makes fewer of a higher quality. Amazon is kind of notorious for just cranking the stuff out, and obviously they watch the data very closely to see who's big and who they're going to continue to invest in.
Sometimes I think that there's no company better at data analysis in Silicon Valley than Netflix, and they keep it close to their
vest. Anybody.
They don't tell anybody. They occasionally.
So why
will
do you say sometimes you think that?
Well, because when you peer into what they're doing. They will not give you numbers, but they do. They are very aware of what people watch, how long they watch, what other things those lead to, and that ends up going into their content deals about what they buy and what they relicense if it's not an original. There's a lot of analysis of viewers' behavior happening behind the scenes. What happens though is then their competitors want to know, like, how give us a number, give us a Nielsen number. and they refuse, and it frustrates everybody else, but they seem very happy with it. And
they,
I think they know
to matter more, but they don't tell you how much they matter.
So they have the best data in the business, but nobody knows it. And so it's this amazing dichotomy where Netflix knows exactly what they're doing and nobody knows really how Netflix is doing. So it's fascinating to do that. And I imagine Amazon has a similar amount of data.
I guess they all do, right? HBO, I guess, doesn't, because
if it's on regular TV, then they have to go back to samples and Nielsen diaries or boxes.
If it comes through the cable company, are they talking?
They may sample some of the cable boxes. It's possible.
Maybe, yeah. Roku is going to try to get that information. It's going to eavesdrop on what shows you're watching. You'll have to give it permission to give you ads. And not just the shows you watch through Roku. There's a system you may not know about called automatic content recognition.
Oh, this is where they listen to the
they actually can
the
see
audio
what you're yeah, they can see what well and video too. They're seeing what you watch. Now you'll have to enable a feature called More Ways to Watch on your Roku TV. It will then collect information about shows you watch, not just on Roku TV, but anything that's on your screen, because the screen has this ACR built into it and can actually tell Roku, "Oh yeah, right now he's watching the cable box, and he's watching Game of Thrones."
Some of these recommendations are so dumb, though. Like, I use Evernote, and now they have a special premium feature where they recommend you when you're taking notes on something related web content. And it's like, this is not helpful. Like,
I think recognition engines in general don't work very well.
But especially
they?
When you're that much removed from what you're actually doing. Like, Roku is not the content provider.
But even Netflix recommendations are crap, aren't
That's
they?
True.
Amazon's are crap. Amazon should know what I would want to buy, and instead they keep offering me. They just offered Jeff Jarvis posted on Facebook, you know, things you might be interested in buying. It was a bunch of phone cord cables that, you know, the like RJ11 cables.
Why?
You always need more of those.
That's what he said. I haven't bought one of those in ever.
this is like smart TVs. This is a real, I think, ongoing story about how they've
they're
gotten smart, but now they're also
stupid.
Doing things with your data. And like now that Netflix embedded in that 4K TV is good for the TV manufacturer because they're giving you a reason to plug in to Ethernet, you know, or something, and plug in or get on your home Wi-Fi. And once that TV is now on the internet, they can get data from you.
And so can the CIA.
And that's what Vizio got dinged for. Right. But it's the same kind of idea that, you know, we want, it's a smart TV, get it on the internet. But, you know, it's a two-way street. At that point, they can get your data. Right. I mean, they aren't necessarily, but it's just a computer sitting in your house, and it may have a camera, and it
They're
definitely can see what your screen is, and it's going to report back.
And that was actually what I liked about Roku, was it seemed like it was the least creepy of all these things. It was just like a nice, mild-mannered platform.
You were just living in
and the TV, because
world.
It's got the screen, they can integrate all this stuff into it. So I feel like there's a group of tech-savvy people now who the first thing they do when they buy a smart TV is turn everything off.
Right.
The danger is that some TVs like really don't want you to do that and will even refuse.
Yeah. I've always said, I just want a monitor.
Yeah.
Don't give me a smart TV. Just give me a monitor.
The
danger is that their business model...
They don't sell anything else. Good luck trying to find one.
Yeah, well, and the business model, once they're starting to build in profit from selling your data into the list price of the TV, they're never going to take it away. Yep. They're going to make it impossible for you to opt out. And so it comes back to people who are savvy are going to need to shop for a TV that's not as cheap just because it's got better privacy features.
This actually segues into the Vault 7 CIA leaks, new information there, shadow brokers, new information there. The Equation Group, we'll talk about that when we come back.
I'll be hiding under the desk.
Yeah. The hackers are winning. And Cleveland police are seeking a suspect of a murder streamed live on Facebook. It was just a matter of time.
Somebody called Dick Wolf. That'll be a Law and Order episode next week.
The guy broadcast a murder on his Facebook stream. He streamed it on Facebook Live. It's not even the first time it's happened.
It's not.
Of course but
not.
It's the first time it was intentional. Oh, my God. What a world. Let's take a break and talk about my doorbell. Speaking of the Internet of Things, do you know about the Ring Video doorbell? This has become the king of the category, partly because Richard Branson put $27 million into it. Ring is growing fast. And I see more. I'm really pleased. I see more and more rings around the neighborhood. The Ring video doorbell, I think I must have been the first in my neighborhood. I got mine installed a couple of years ago. And by the way, I'm no handyman, but it was easy to install. The Ring doorbell comes with everything you need to do it. And if you've got a wired doorbell, it's really fairly easy. There's just two screws holding that in, two wires in the door jamb. It comes with a screwdriver. If you needed a drill, it has a drill bit. It has a level even, so you can make it look nice, and it comes in a variety of finishes. So it replaces your wired doorbell, pairs up to your Wi-Fi, and suddenly you never miss a visitor again. And, you know, I originally got it because I didn't hear the doorbell ring. Like a lot of homeowners, I have the worst chime. Why is it door chimes? You can't, do you have a good one?
No, I don't have one at all.
Yeah,
in fact.
It's hard to hear, right? Ours wasn't even that old. It went donk. It didn't go dun dun bum. It went donk. So you wouldn't hear it. So I initially got the Ring because I thought, well, my phone's paired to it. I'll hear my phone. I have my phone on. And actually now, because Lisa has it and Michael has it, everybody in the family, the whole house lights up with somebody. Not even, by the way, it's when they ring the doorbell, you hear dong, dong, dong. But when they walk up the stoop, walk up the path, there's motion detector in it. It sees you. It sees them and it rings us then. So I can look at, in fact, the other day, the kids were alone. We went to a movie and the kids were alone. And I heard the people coming and going. And I was looking and I was saying, oh, yeah, that's fine. And then one of the kids was like locked out. And I pressed the button and I talked to him because it's got a microphone and speaker in it, too. And I said, Tanner, what's going on? He said, they locked me out. Why'd they lock you out? Because
at the movie theater while you're doing this?
Well, it was in between shows or something. I wasn't doing it while I would never. Never. Okay. Dude, maybe we were at dinner at the time. Anyway, what's going on? So you're really in touch with what's going on in your house. I love that. Recently, Ring introduced a new product, and they're constantly doing new products. This is called the Floodlight Cam. It's the world's only motion-activated HD security camera with two high-beam LED floodlights. So it lights up. This is what you want, right? You want it to light up the area of your house. And it has 110 dB siren alarm. By the way, that's pretty loud. 110 dB, that's everybody's going to hear that in the neighborhood. And two-way talk. So you can say things like, if you don't step away from the house, I will press the alarm button and then deafen the guy. Customizable motion zones and dual sensors so you know no more false alarms. It's got object and face detection, so this thing is so smart. It's hardwired. It's weatherproof. It's available in black and white, and you can use the Ring app not only to talk to and listen to what's going on, but to flash the lights, sound the alarm, and zoom in to focus. That's why it has a face recognition, smart zoom, panning. Wall Street Journal said best of CES 2017, and now it's here. All kits. You can go right now. If you go right now to ring.com/twit, you can get a deal on their Ring of security kits. All kits include the Ring video doorbell and your choice of either one, two, or three floodlight cams. So, you know, depending on how many you need. The pro kits have a slim video doorbell pro. That's got the 1080p HD video, the night vision, hardwired, never needs to charge. The Ring video doorbell and floodlight cams install easily in minutes. You can do it. And together, you're getting such great 24/7 monitoring of your whole home, wherever you are. You could be in your bedroom, but you could also be thousands of miles away. Connect your Ring video doorbell with your favorite smart locks and hubs for added convenience, monitoring, and security. Now you've got your castle. Join the millions of homeowners who protect their home with Ring for a limited time. Up to $150 off one of these Ring of security kits. That's a great deal, depending on which kit you buy. Ring.com/twit. $50 to $100 off. That's a great deal. Ring.com/twit. Brand new. The Ring floodlights are here. So is Liz Gaines from 60db.co at Liz, GANNES on the Twitter. You still use Twitter?
I do.
Haven't given up on it?
No, I am not the best Twitter follow these days. I'm kind of just like, I share my stories every once in a while. I don't know.
You use it as publicity vehicle.
I don't have a current reason I want to share more. But
right.
I don't know.
I think when you have a kid, you maybe want to share less, right?
Yeah. I think that's part of it.
Yeah. My kids wish I would share
less. I read Twitter a lot, but
Yeah, I use it, you know, and I use it as a news ticker a lot.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on?
Do you want to know a funny story about my Twitter followers?
Yeah.
I think like most of them are because followed me because one time Selena Gomez followed me.
And they said anybody Selena follows is good enough for me.
No, and then they all followed me, and then they tweeted at me, could you DM Selena to follow me? That was like for about a year or two. That was all of my at mentions.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Because she only followed like 70 people or something.
So do you know why she followed you?
I interviewed her for a story.
Oh, so you and Selena, can you get her to follow me?
Yes.
Thank you.
Sure.
That'd be cool. How about you, Jason? Who's your best follower?
Oh, I don't know if I have anybody good following me. I mean, they're all beautiful.
All your followers are now really pissed off.
They're all beautiful. Seriously, but are they famous?
Set them up. That was mean.
I used one of these like analyze your followers tools once. It was like, you have the most in common with, and it was everyone else Selena Gomez follows.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, you follow one Selena Gomez.
Supposed to say Soledad O'Brien, wasn't
I? Yes, you were.
Very nice. You were.
I just missed it by that much.
Sixcolors.com. A man and fiance kicked off a United flight en route to their wedding.
Oh, gosh.
It's not. Twitter. I saw it on Twitter. Must be. It just happened. Unbelievable. All right. Vault 7, CIA. Vault 7 is the CIA hacks, mostly old. Actually, we know they're old because Microsoft announced this week that they'd all been patched. So raises the question, how did Microsoft know about these attacks?
Yeah, I mean, they apparently were alerted, in October, but didn't release the patch, so it was not quite a zero day, but then it was released publicly. I mean, the speculation I've seen is that they had a partner.
Somebody told them.
Which NSA is or something like that.
Not a reason to get angry, to be honest with you. That is a reason to be thrilled that there is some sort of channel that after the CIA uses a hack, you know, they discover a vulnerability or they buy a vulnerability. That's great. They don't want to tell Microsoft yet because they want to use it against somebody. But having used it against their person, I think that's really the best thing the CIA could do is say, and it could be under, you know, surreptitious channels, hey, Microsoft, there's this flaw. We're done with it. So you can patch it now. And don't tell anybody. I think that's fine. Clearly, that's what's going on. And I actually feel like that's a good thing. One of the fixes, I presume, was it this word vulnerability? Or is that still... that must be fixed now, right?
I think so. Yeah, they fixed the word patch that was used. That was also... And this is like state intelligence actors doing all of this. This is government spies using security flaws. And so part of the disclosure becomes, I think, part of the game, which is if the NSA doesn't need this and they know that some bad guys are using it, then they maybe disclose that to the vendor and say, you should close this hole. But if the NSA wants to use it and thinks it's in their benefit to use it, then they don't disclose it.
Right.
Even if it puts American data at risk because they don't want to lose their tool. Because these bugs are tools to spying agencies.
Yeah, this was not the CIA. This was, as you say, the shadow broker's leak. It was a Microsoft Word booby trap that loaded PCs with malware, and Microsoft says it's been fixed, but it was a zero day, and it was first found by researchers at McAfee. So it infected your machine. And this is the real thing. I mean, we've known about Word macro viruses for a long time. But even if macro – and, of course, Microsoft, as a result, now warns you before it runs a document with macros. It says, there's macros in here. Those are potentially unsafe. Do you want me to run them? Didn't matter on this one. Even if you didn't have macros turned on, it would run. And it even worked against Windows 10. So thank you, NSA. Thank you.
Well, that's – I mean, there's the larger question of just the – at what point should a government disclose bugs that they find that are security holes? What is the responsibility of using those as your own spy technique versus closing the holes so that the people in your country aren't being spied upon by others? You know, right? Because it's our government knows that there are bugs that allow this to go on and don't say anything.
It's
because they want to use the bugs.
Yeah, are they protecting U.S. security?
WikiLeaks has become this check on that system.
Right.
And is that really the role that anyone wants to them to be playing?
All right, enough. I hate this stuff. It's depressing.
It is. It's an, almost enough to make you just throw away your computers and hide in the woods, but not quite.
Government hackers used this. I don't know if it's the same word, zero day, or another word, zero day, to install spyware on Russian targets.
I think that's the same one.
Same one? Okay. This one was discovered by FireEye. The hackers left a series of booby-trapped documents on a server with an Italian IP address. And I guess they were hoping you'd just download them, or maybe they probably linked to them.
There was a kind of a sweet story by Quinn Norton on Medium a couple of weeks ago, on Back Channel actually, called Love in the Time of Cryptography, about having a relationship with someone who is also a nut about keeping everything private. And it's kind of sweet because they don't preserve, there is no like record of their communications. So in the way that we all are kind of constantly capturing our life as we're living it, they don't have that because they're...
They did that on purpose. They don't want anybody to...
Yeah.
See, I think that you can go overboard on this. I mean...
Right. But you can also romanticize it, which this story did kind of...
They made it romantic. But they're going to be sorry in 20 years when they want to show their kids their initial romantic love letters, and they don't... Well, maybe they wouldn't want to show them to their kids anyway. Maybe then they don't have anything.
You just found it. You were
right there. I was right there. I love Back Channel. There it is. Love in the Time of Crypto. How security software and encryption created an old-fashioned romance. Did they meet like in the hacker IRC?
They met in real
IRC?
Life.
Yeah. And then later.
So it was not like a random surprise.
And then later met in an IRC. Wow. All right. I don't know what to say about this story, except the Cleveland Police Department has confirmed it's looking for a suspect, Steve Stevens, who committed a homicide and streamed the crime on Facebook Live. All right, I guess you'd give a trigger warning here. What I'm about to say could be very upsetting to somebody. According to Heavy.com, the video showed Stevens speaking to an elderly man before shooting him through the window of the car. On the stream, Stevens says, "I've killed others," and he threatened to continue. Police say he's armed and dangerous and are warning people.
They're searching for him now.
This is an ongoing story. They're warning people not to approach him. Facebook spokesperson said, "This is a horrific crime. We do not allow this kind of content on Facebook." Oh, well, that's nice to know.
Right, against the community standards?
Yeah, it's against our standards. Mm. We take our responsibility to keep people safe on Facebook very seriously, and are in touch with law enforcement in emergencies when there are direct threats to physical safety. It's unclear whether Facebook notified the police or somebody else notified the police.
Doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, I guess it would be good if Facebook had some sort of system for monitoring and catching this kind of stuff as it happens. It doesn't save anybody's life, but at least it prevents Facebook from being used as a vehicle for this kind of stuff, or at least discourages people. It's just, what's wrong with people? Sigh. Did you see the prison? Here's a happy story. Prisoners who were working in the prison on their computers. This is in Ohio's Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections Center. They were fixing computers, and they would steal parts bit by bit. Then they built two PCs from the parts, hid them in the ceiling, and connected to the state's network. And according to the Register, did cyber shenanigans.
That is a cool story.
Amazing.
Five prisoners.
I mean, they're still in prison. But.
Yeah, no, they didn't get out. But they built, you know what? Access to the internet's probably a pretty big deal for them.
They had a certain kind of freedom.
they were caught by WebSense. So there's a little ad for WebSense. They'd cobbled together spare parts collected from Marion Correction Institution's RET3, a program that helped to rehabilitate prisoners by getting them to break down old PCs into component parts for recycling. These guys are smart enough to say, "Hey, that's a pretty good sound card.
Wow.
I think I could use that motherboard."
Someone should hire these guys.
Yeah, they should be used for good, not evil.
Well, wait a minute. They also used the Department Offender Tracking System, or DOTS, aptly named, to steal the personal information of another inmate and use those details to apply for 5 credit cards.
Evil. I said it needs to be not for evil. Not for
you're
evil.
You're in jail, and you're committing credit card fraud.
Oh, my God.
A fraud. Additional forensics by a more technical team reported finding, quote, a large hacker's toolkit with numerous malicious tools for possible attacks. These malicious tools included password cracking tools, VPN tools, network enumeration tools, handcrafted software. They're writing hacking tools.
How'd you like to be? What crimes were they in prison for?
Oh, that's a good question.
How'd you like to be hacked or have your credit card stolen and find out who was behind it and they're already in jail?
Like, what are you going to do? Forensics team found self-signed certificates, pigeon chat accounts, Tor sites, Tor Geo exit nodes, EtherSoft, virtual phone, pornography, videos, VideoLAN, and other various software.
What kind of world are we living on that this is our feel-good story of the week?
This is our happy story. Happy story.
The good news, though, is that they're all now wearing a Faraday cage jumpsuit. That's their new jumpsuit, and that's
it. I wish I knew what these prisoners were in jail for. I don't think it says in this story, which is pretty awesome. They were using WebSense. This happened a couple of years ago, but it's now coming out. WebSense email alert reported to the ODRC's Operations Support Center that a computer operating on their network had exceeded a daily internet usage threshold. Further alerts, 7 regarding hacking and 59 regarding proxy avoidance, reported that the user was committed to network mischief. But then they had to find the computer, which was hidden in the ceiling.
That's so great.
Wow, that's kind of remarkable. That is, I think that's initiative. You could make Pruno in the prison toilet, or you could hack credit cards.
You know what was the most important story this weekend? Is
Please tell me, because I'm looking.
Yes. New York Times. Is American retail at a historic tipping point?
Oh, yeah. And that goes with the zombie shopping mall story, too.
Yeah.
What's wrong? Sure does. What's wrong with America's retailers?
More workers in general merchandise stores have been laid off since October. About 89,000 Americans. More than all of the people employed in the United States coal industry.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically the coal industry is Arby's. This is like retail.
Yeah, this is this particular sector of the economy, which is huge, going down the toilet.
One analyst said it's the change is coming at you so fast it feels like it's accelerating. The transformation's hollowing out suburban shopping malls, bankrupting longtime brands, and leading to staggering job losses. What's the zombie shopping mall?
Well, they did it's like photos in another story that's related to this. It's probably linked from it. That is, it's the same idea, is that there are certain malls that have recast themselves and they've gone higher end.
Yeah,
and they've been successful.
There's a reason to go.
But there are a lot of them that are just falling apart because, you know, their anchor stores are Macy's and JCPenney.
You lose, yeah.
And those are not drawing people in. And it turns out that so many people are preferring to shop at big box stores or on the internet that the traditional shopping mall is now a lot less appealing. And so some of them can redefine
Macy's
themselves.
Macy's is closing like 100 stores.
But a lot of them can't. And like Sears and Kmart, which Sears owns Kmart, that is a company that may not make it at all. They may just go out of business. And so they what do you do with that space? And how do you turn it into something else?
Oh, yeah, the story is good, too.
This is Amazon.
A lot of it, you know, and there are other trends, too, like,
and
you know,
Amazon
Walmart.
Is hiring.
And,
like, didn't they just announce they're going to hire, like,
yeah.
tens of
yeah,
thousands
and
of
by
people?
The way, the worst jobs ever. You're working in these very...
That is an issue.
Yeah, difficult conditions.
With robots that will eventually replace you there, too.
And eventually you'll have pick-and-pull robots.
But I don't know. I feel bad, but I'm happier buying my stuff on Amazon Prime than going to the mall.
Me too. Do you buy clothes on Amazon?
Yeah.
Do you buy shoes on Amazon?
Yeah, I just did.
See, those are the reasons people would go somewhere, is to try something on, to see how it looks in person.
I still do that to a certain degree. Like,
they have
a terrible
shopping interface, though, for stuff like clothes.
Yeah. So I'll get a pair of shoes at some point at a local store, and I'll pay a lot for them. But when I want a refill, when I want that shoe again, mm-hmm. if I can get it on Amazon, I'll just get it again because I know it fits and I know that I like it.
Yeah.
So it tends to be like the first purchase is at a store. But then if I want 10 more down the road, they don't get my sale because, you know, I paid them for their marked up first version. But then in the end, it's just so much more convenient to say, you know, it's 6 months later and I want another one of these, I'm just going to
I'm in my sister's wedding in a couple months and I bought 3 pairs of shoes on Amazon last week.
Partly because it's easy to return, right?
Yeah.
You buy as many as you want to look at. You look at them at home. You don't have to look at them in the store. They talk about a Burlington shopping mall, which used to have 100 stores, now has 20.
Yeah.
20 tenants. Last Wednesday, a woman came to the mall looking for shoes but left frustrated because the Payless store had just shuttered.
Right.
2 years ago, the mall's owners announced a $230 million renovation, but the plans have stalled. You know, I mean, I can't say I'm sad that malls are going out of business because, you know, but I'm sad about all the lost jobs and the lost sense of community. Pretty soon, nobody's going to even leave the house anymore. Right? Why would you need to? You've got a robot bringing you food.
Right. Drones are bringing all your groceries to you. By the way, I on Twitter yesterday, I asked about what you'd find at the zombie shopping mall. So, Forever Dead at 21, Victim on a Stick, Abercrumbling and Fitch was from my friend Phil, Coffin and Barrel, that's a good one.
I love this.
There are a lot of Saks Fifth Circle of Hell was a good one. Skinnabon from Cable Sasser, I like that one. And of course, the Microsoft Store. Anyway.
Ow!
Zing! The last one has to be a real one, right? Has to be.
That's the joke, right there.
It could be Nordstrom if you prefer.
Wow!
But yeah, zombie shop. It is scary, right? This is when we talk about like the future of work being impacted by automating things. Before we even get to that, we're going to have the future of these whole sectors like retail, where just the convenience of online shopping.
It's happening. This is not the future.
And where there is retail success, it is at Walmarts and Costco's and other kind of like big box stores, Targets, that are not the mall where it's like trying to replicate the old downtown of a city where there are 50 different shops. Now, that's also kind of peeling away.
Is there going to be a backlash? Is there going to be, somebody coming along saying it's tech that's, well, in France, for instance, one of the candidates in the presidential election says, "I'm gonna fight terrorism by taking on tech companies." These are gonna be. I feel there'll be a backlash.
Sure.
That the tech is ruining our economy. They're. Well, look what happened in San Francisco. They're raising rents. There was a serious backlash.
I think it was Mnuchin. Yeah, Steven Mnuchin was interviewed and said,
"Our Secretary of the Treasury,
increased automation is quote not even on our radar screen."
Yeah,
50 to 100 more years away.
Yeah. Everybody who knows about that laughed so much at that ruefully because he's totally wrong. It's already happening and it's going to only happen faster.
I think that's a case. Obviously, he knows better.
Why is he saying that? There must be some game there.
He knows better. His company, Goldman Sachs, even says that automation is going to be a problem, right? I mean, he knows that. He read that report. So I think this is, I'm afraid there's two reactions you're going to get from government. One is, well, we got to get technology. The problem is Amazon. Let's regulate them. Let's put them out of business. Let's save the stores. The other one, which might even be worse, is I don't hear you. Nee, 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 nee. And I'm afraid that
seen that antagonizing the tech industry goes a long way. why doesn't DC?
Well, whatever's going to get more votes, right? So if you say it's morning in America, everything's wonderful. We're making America great again, and you say it enough times. That might get votes, and it might be that you need a bad guy. And I think you certainly do need bad guys. Fall guys are always valuable in an election.
So you think that's their next move?
I worry. Mutations.
The danger is abdicating the responsibility, that they don't know enough about it to want to deal with it.
Well, it's not the right way to prepare for it.
So then you just kind of let it go, and then it happens on its own without any oversight at all until it's way too late. And we've already seen that, right? I mean, you talk about the coal miners earlier, like – That was something that happened. It already happened, but the fallout happened after the fact. So you lose the transportation sector to automated trucks. Elon Musk this week, right? That was in our little show list too.
He says there's going to be semi-trucks later this year.
Later this year, there's going to be a Tesla semi-truck that's semi-autonomous and electric. And, you know, so
another huge sector.
What happens?
In fact, this was the week that Tesla became the most valuable auto company in America.
Crazy.
Beating GM. That's stock, but still.
Which means it's about future value.
Right. I believe it.
I want to know how many cars they can make a year.
This was a record year. What was it, 25,000?
Yeah.
That is not that many.
It's not a huge number, but he's.
To do the three.
He's ramping up big time.
I think they say 500,000, but that just seems like an unimaginable jump.
I would never bet against Elon Musk, I have to say. And the big part of this is building that gigafactory.
In Reno, yeah.
Because now you're master of your battery production. If you, eventually, they want to master the whole
thing. But do they still make all the cars in Fremont?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, no.
And that's and the NUMMI plant where they make those in Fremont, California, is huge. It's like they're only using a portion of the capacity
so they have a lot of room to grow.
When we were down there, because I was picking up my Tesla in July, we were down there, took the factory tour. They were already building the Model 3 area. I mean, they have plenty of space to grow.
Because that was where they used to, Toyota and GM, that was a joint venture, and there's they made, you know,
I don't know if you could make half a million vehicles there. I bet you could.
Well, that's a starting point.
We had a great week this week. Now, I think we are not going to run the week ahead promo. We have, are we? All right. Take a look at what happened this week.
On Twit.
Matza Leo.
Oh, Matza Leo.
Apple is never going to do a matza cracker filter. It would be too undignified.
Tech news today.
Google's artificial intelligence is going to make you the Picasso of clip art. When using the AutoDraw tool, Google's AI will analyze the image being drawn with every stroke that you add and update a series of thumbnail images up at the top that it thinks match the item that's being sketched.
It's
a dog.
It's a dog.
Hippopotamus.
Like I said. Oh, a hippo.
Of course it's a hippo.
But they doesn't know it's a hippo, so it's not a good hippo.
The new screensavers.
Today, you're going to be making pancakes.
I am?
With the pancake bot.
Pancake bot, pancake bot, pancake bot.
The prototype was originally made out of Legos. 99% Legos and 1% ketchup bottles.
Twit, it's what's for dinner.
You know, this week Google announced that they've developed AI that can sketch like a human being. So I think that might be the next step, that you get, you know, some AI in here and just
AI
see what
happens.
AI pancake
bot.
Hey, pancake bot. Draw a dinosaur pancake.
Oh, man. Can it do
is
that?
Is it moving?
No.
You guys got version 2.0. Sorry.
Oh, no. Yeah.
The week ahead looks good, too. Jason Howell has it.
Here's a look at just a few of the stories we'll be watching in the week ahead. On Monday, April 17th, Google Spaces, also known as that Google group messaging client you probably never actually used, is being shut down. Google says it will fold everything that it learned from Spaces into its other many messaging products. On Wednesday, April 19th, Chinese hardware maker Xiaomi is holding a press event to unveil its Mi 6 and Mi 6 Plus flagship smartphones. It's expected to have a 5.1-inch display to start, dual cameras on the back, and the top-of-the-line Snapdragon 835 chip inside. On Thursday, April 20th, Slovakian startup Aeromobile will show off its first commercially available flying car Top Marquez Monaco Supercar Show. Pre-orders are expected sometime this year. And on Friday, April 21st, Samsung's flagship Galaxy S8 and S8 Plus smartphones will hit U.S. shelves, along with the launch of the redesigned Gear VR to go along with it. And for free, if you pre-ordered. You did pre-order, right? That's a look at a few of the things we'll be tracking in the coming week. Join Megan Maroney and me on Tech News Today every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, here on twit.tv.
And by the way, your Samsung Galaxy S8 will have a special hardware button for their new voice assistant, Bixby. But when you press it, nothing will happen because Bixby
is delayed.
You got to really feel for Samsung. At least the phone won't burst into flame, will it? We'll find out. I actually get mine on Friday. I'm very excited. Our show today brought to you by Betterment. This is, speaking of robots, the best way to invest for your future. You've seen technology transform commerce, entertainment, ride sharing, home security. Did you know it can also help you invest better? Betterment is the largest independent automated investment service, and it's changed the industry by making investing easier and at a fraction of what you pay for traditional financial services. So it's better and it's less expensive. Is that awesome? Betterment offers smart technology and human advisors, and they're one of the few that does it. I really like this. So you get the best results at every level of investment. The automation's great because it can help you build a portfolio, but then it also monitors it and rebalances it and keeps track of it minute by minute in a way that a human can't. But at the same time, you want to be able to talk to professionals if you've got questions. And Betterment offers a team of certified financial professionals and licensed financial experts who will help you. They'll monitor the accounts. They can answer questions. So you get everything you need, including if you want planning calls and notifications throughout the year. This is really the way to do it. Betterment's goal-based investing framework and advice algorithm will let you know if you're on track in seconds. In fact, you can go there right now and get a checkup. You can also securely sync outside investments with Betterment so you can see your total net worth in one place, get an idea of how you stand all around. They've got something called Smart Deposits, which lets you automatically invest excess cash. That really helps build your nest egg fast. Their Retire Guide will give you a consolidated review of your retirement, calculates your gap if you've got one. And they do, of course, all the most important things that only software can do well, like tax loss harvesting, which lowers investment taxes and increases after-tax returns. No trade, no transaction, no rebalancing fees ever, and no minimum to sign up. Global diversification, smart rebalancing, lower fees. With all of that and their really great system, you can expect returns higher than the typical DIY investor. And it's so much easier. Their end-to-end investing means faster cash transfers, tax forms available at the earliest possible date, secure investing. It's Betterment. It's a better way. As with everything in life, I should say, investment involves risk. But, you know, there's a risk if you just put your money in the mattress, too. Right now, get 1 month managed free when you make an initial deposit of $10,000 or more. To learn more, visit Betterment.com/twit. That's Betterment.com/twit. Betterment is investing made better. This scared me. And this isn't really a news story, except just a beware. The folks at WordFence have discovered, using Unicode, a new way to spoof URLs that are look exactly the same. And the issue is here, you could have what looks like epic.com in your browser bar, but it's not. It's actually xn-e1awd7f.com. But Chrome and Firefox render it as epic.com. I'll show you right now. I'll click it. This is their demo site. And if I go to this site, and it's safe to do so. It's not going to hurt me. If you look in the browser bar, I don't know if you can see this, but it looks like epic.com, except it isn't. And you could, if you really knew what you were doing, you could view the certificate, but it takes a little bit of effort to go to, you know, the settings and the tools. I could actually go to developer tools, and I can look at the certificate, and the certificate is reported correctly. Sorry, I'm doing this kind of funny. Developer tools, and then I go to the security tab, and I can see, even though it says epic.com, oh, I'm on the wrong page. Let's go back. Even though it says I'm on epic.com, if I view the certificate, it shows as the actual certificate, which is that XN-E1AWD. So I know it's hard to see. It's a little small on my screen. But that's a little scary. And it has to do with a flaw in the way the browser renders text thanks to Unicode. So there is a fix in Firefox. If you go to about:config and search for Punycode, you can change the value from false to true for this network.idn.show_show_Punycode. There's no fix right now in Chrome.
Well, they say it's coming.
It's in Canary. So it's in the alpha version.
Yeah.
Which means, yeah, it's probably coming in time.
Well,
boy, that's scary.
Watch out this week.
Yeah, that is scary.
And something that I always do, especially if I get an email from somewhere that tells me to go somewhere, especially if it's a complex URL,
type it in.
Or even sometimes if it's a complex URL, I'll paste it in and then I'll go to the domain name and delete it and then type it back in myself.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, is you can't even believe your eyes necessarily. So always, when in doubt, if you get an email, see if you can type in where they say you should go. And make sure that it's, the .com probably domain that you intend it to be, because otherwise they can mask that stuff so it looks legit, but it isn't.
And, of course, the feel-good story of the year, an 8-year-old learns to drive on YouTube and takes his little sister to McDonald's.
It is a great place to learn things. I mean, YouTube, not McDonald's.
You could watch YouTube at McDonald's.
You could.
East Palestine, Ohio, the police department responds to a series of calls from concerned citizens saying there's a little boy driving through town in a minivan. They tracked him to the McDonald's. He had pulled up to the drive-thru, decided not to go in. pulled up to the drive-thru, the people at McDonald's said, we thought the parents must be in the back, that they were pranking us.
Isn't that a giveaway? He should have gotten, I mean, kids, they're going to do what they're going to do, but he should have gotten out. Then no one would have known that he was driving.
So when they asked him.
Maybe he didn't know how to park. Didn't watch that video.
The boy said he really wanted a cheeseburger, but his parents were asleep, so he watched a driving video on YouTube, grabbed the keys, scooped some money out of his piggy bank, packed his four-year-old sister in the minivan, and headed out.
What is this kid going to do when he's 10?
Megan asked. Parents of kids go, oh, God. Throughout his drive, roughly a mile and a half, the boy followed traffic laws, stopped for red lights, avoided hitting anything. When he got to McDonald's, he pulled through the drive-thru like a pro, ordering a cheeseburger, some chicken nuggets for his sister, and some fries. The kids did get their snack. No one was hurt, and no one, not even the parents, got in trouble. But it just shows you can learn anything on the internet.
Amazing.
Isn't that a great story?
That kid is a visual learner, if ever there was one.
What I didn't realize until I read the article on Autoblog is that he hadn't been, for the last 6 months watching YouTube videos.
Just that night.
Just that night. Said, you know, I'd like to know how to drive. And he goes to YouTube and he finds out. That's amazing. We are done. I hope you enjoyed your snacks from Nature Box. They're fine snacks.
Tasty.
Hashtag ad.
Thank you, sponsor. You have to do that. The FTC will ding you if you know. I feel bad because I keep opening these up and eating more. I really got to put them away. Liz Gaines, it's so great to have you from 60DB, 60db.co. Go there and get the Android app. We can download it as a beta now.
Yeah, it's out there.
But it'll change later in the week.
Well, it'll just look a little different, but it works.
Nice.
I hope.
I'm getting it. Yeah. I'm listening to it on the way home. Awesome. I love 60DB.
And then when you go into your house, you can keep listening where you left off.
Never stop listening.
On your
Always.
Alexa.
I had a call on the radio show today from a lady who said, so how much power does it use if I leave the TV on in every room? I said, what do you mean? She said, well, I'm very ADD and I like to sit and watch TV and sew, but sometimes I have to get up and I don't want to miss a thing. So I just walk around from room to room and I want to be able to have my show on everywhere. And I said, go ahead. How much power could it use? Get some solar panels. Jason Snell's at sixcolors.com and at Jay Snell. And the podcast is awesome.
Thank you.
And there's many of them.
There's many. It's a podcast and a network, theincomparable.com. You can check it out. And I've got some tech stuff that I do at relay.fm too. So
yeah, give that a plug.
I'm doing a lot of podcasts.
Give that a plug because Relay's got some
great
shows. Yeah,
so Upgrade is the one that I do weekly, and we do Clockwise, which is also weekly, that are both tech shows. And Clockwise is fun because it's half an hour. So if you are looking for something a little shorter, it will fit the bill. Lots of good stuff. So, yeah, it's fun. I'm doing a lot of podcasting.
When is the five-minute show coming?
Robot or Not is about 5 to 10 minutes.
We'll feature that.
Every week or two about...
What do you ask if this is a robot or...
Well, it started with asking John Siracusa from...
Who sounds like a robot, excuse me.
Well, he's not a robot. We've established this now. But he is very exacting.
He has kind of that robotic...
Yeah, exactly.
Company.
No, it's not a robot, he says. So... That's where it started because he has a very particular definition. But now we've done so many robots that I'm sick of it. So we're branching out into other areas. So we talked about we did the sandwich thing because you got to do a sandwich thing. We talked about what makes a villain into a supervillain. Where is the line there?
Oh, this is good
and
stuff.
And other esoteric questions that I ask in addition to finding out whether things are robots or not.
Everybody knows the biggest debates, the hottest debates are about the least important thing.
Absolutely. And this is my attempt to cash in on that with a podcast that basically has no ads. But it's fun. And short. People like short podcasts
sometimes. Awesome.
Yeah.
I thank you all for being here. We have a few more days in the voting on the Webby Awards. We're nominated. The Triangulation Show is nominated for a Webby for our interview with Edward Snowden's attorney. And I think we're only leading by a few percentage points. So every vote is going to count for the next 3 days as we try to beat Marketplace and General Electric and some really big brands. So if you would, twit.to/webbies2017. That's a shortened URL that we made for you. Make it easy. twit.to/webbies2017. They do ask you to log in to make sure you don't vote more than once. You can use your Twitter account or Facebook account for that if you don't want to make a Webbies account. But I appreciate the vote. And we'll let you know how it all comes out. I think the voting ends on the 20th, right? Pretty soon. Yeah, just a few days. Don't forget to file your taxes. And remember, the IRS will not be calling you at home, nor will they be sending you an email. So don't believe it if you do get that call or that email. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Bye-bye. Happy Easter.
It's amazing.
I don't like to say Happy Easter because